big show for you here today. It is our three-round Dynasty Rookie Mock Draft. Yes, it truly is a big show. I've got Nate Tice, I've got Justin Boone in the saddle with me to go through all three rounds of a Dynasty Rookie Mock Draft. Super flex, tight end premium. Thank God it's tight end premium because it gets late pretty early in this Dynasty Rookie Draft. Where are we taking these rookies? Who went to good landing spots? Who's making us a little nervous? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. No longer in New York. I'm back home, back in the little box, and very excited for our show today because it is time, as promised, for our Dynasty Rookie Mock Draft. And joining me to talk a little ball, to do a little mock drafting, to get through what is promised to be a pretty painful exercise based on this year's rookie class, it is two fine young men. It is Justin Boone. It is Nate Tice. Boone, since I didn't just talk to you about 30 minutes ago for a different Yahoo podcast, what's going on, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. I'm right in the mix of a few rookie drafts already, some analyst leagues. And I was telling you before the show, we'll talk about it today. And we've already mentioned on previous shows that once you get to like the late first round, it's really pretty wide open in these rookie drafts. I didn't expect some of the picks that I've seen in analyst drafts already, starting like that early second round, just some wild names going off the board. So I'm kind of thinking that this might be a really fun year. I was worried initially when we were going over it on the weekend and thinking like, man, the talent's not really there. It's not as deep. And this is going to be really brutal doing these dynasty drafts. I think it's almost more fun now because of the chaos that we're going to see.
Yeah, it's going to be chaotic. There's going to be some weird ones. And the other man here to join us for this exercise, mucking it up with the Dynasty Rookie Streets, it is our guy, Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, man?
Maybe my favorite show to do, especially after the draft. Also, as someone that's in way too many Dynasty leagues, the closer we are to the draft is the better I do before the mini camps come out, this guy's rising. It's like, no, I prefer to go before the draft at times because, that's where you can find the guys before they get the, I'm not in any leagues that actually do that, but there's a couple that they're on the schedule now. The drafts are actually on the schedule, but like you say, there's once we get into round two and even the end of round one, it really, it's all over the place here. So this is a very fun exercise to do.
I mean, to be honest with you guys, producer Colin sent the results of Nate and I did this episode, just the two of us last year. Boone, obviously, we're very happy to have you here to class the joint up because producer Colin sent me sent all of us the results of last year's class. And as we're talking about like, oh, man, this year it really falls apart at that end of the first round. I mean, Nate, you and I picked Caleb Johnson and RJ Harvey at the end of the first round in last year's draft. And
yeah,
I mean, RJ Harvey could still be fine, but like Caleb Johnson, that one, that pick completely fell apart. You know what? Swinging like 30 seconds after we made it on that one.
He dropped a kickoff at the end of September and we never saw him again. A guy that never returned kicks in college, though, but let's have him do it. Because Aaron Rodgers doesn't trust him. So then he can't see the field. So then we have him returning kicks because we took him in the third round. And then he mishandles one. And then that's it. Bye-bye, Caleb Johnson. I'm so glad I drafted him in a couple of leagues because I love that zone running and the zone running system. I know there's a couple of picks I liked in that mock. And then I was like, yeah, I really tripped at the end there.
The Steelers are so scarred from the Caleb Johnson kick return experience that they drafted another Iowa product, Caden Wiegen, in the fourth round, way ahead of where he was supposed to. He was on the freaking golf course when they drafted him in the fourth round. That's how much he wasn't expecting to be drafted in the fourth round. So that's how badly things went from the Caleb Johnson standpoint. But the good news is, fellas, Boone, Nate and I were talking about this today. Yes, we are going to all try to get through this 2026 class together. But the good news is 2027 apparently offers more hope for the Dynasty Bros out there. Boone, you and I have already kind of talked about this. Ryan McDowell pointed this out today that Dane Brugler in his initial 2027 first round mock draft, 5 quarterbacks, 2 running backs, 6 wide receivers. That's right. A lot of work for me next year. I'd love to see it. One tight end. So, Nate, it sounds like we're going to get a lot of good skill position guys in next year's first round.
Yeah, I'm doing my too early big board right now, and it's juicy. It's lived up to the hype so far. It really has. And this is not just me name scouting. This is notes I took throughout this year, knowing what's going to be eligible and assuming some guys were going to declare, but they didn't. And then on top of that, just really diving deep and for sure locked in. Arch Manning is the real deal. Believe the hype. He really is that good, guys. Like he's outstanding. But then receiver wise, there's two guys that, and I'm now learning this because I don't really follow recruiting. But then once these guys become draft eligible, they enter my life kind of thing. And then I learn a lot about them. So I'm very aware of Jeremiah Smith from Ohio State, but he really is kind of a Julio clone. But then the other guy that was the two most highly recruited receivers in the internet kind of recruiting era was Julio Jones and AJ Green. And then in this class, there's Jeremiah Smith, who is a Julio Jones clone. And then there's Cam Coleman, who went to Auburn, now transferring to Texas, who's been statistically a little disappointing, but I ended up scouting him and he's just like AJ Green. So it's kind of funny that these two highly recruited guys are just like the last two highly recruited guys, but that's getting into Nick Marsh, transfer from Michigan State, ended up at Indiana now. You got Charlie Becker from Indiana. They might have two top 20 guys. Texas has another receiver as well. There's Amarion Miller from Arizona State. It's a really, really loaded class. And then Ryan Williams from Alabama is another guy to throw out there. A couple running backs, TJ Moore from Clemson at receiver. It's a cool class. And a couple tight ends as well. So yeah, it believe the hype. It's really looking that way, that this could be a really, really good class.
So what you're saying is like the 2027 class is like a Christopher Nolan movie where like we know going into the theater, this is going to be an awesome experience. This year, we're kind of hoping this is one of those movies like you just walked in, you haven't even seen the trailer, and hey, you get surprised and all of a sudden it turns out to be one of your favorite movies. Like, is that hopefully what we're going to get out of this one?
Yeah, you're hoping this is the one, like the one director directed this and then Marvel swoops him up to direct like a Spider-Man sequel right. Because, it's like that indie movie that's like actually surprisingly better than you thought it was going to be. And they're like, hey, you did a good job. Here you go. So it's Taika Waititi. That's a reference. He directed the Thor movies and What We Do in Shadows. So maybe I'll throw that one out. But yeah, that's maybe what this class is. But yeah, next year's class is the Odyssey. It's definitely the Odyssey. That's what it's looking like. Maybe. Not Dunkirk. What was the one that we did in between? Oh, Oppenheimer. Yeah, next year's class is Oppenheimer. That really is what it is.
All right, before we get in any movie talk here, so far we haven't said anything that I haven't. I've actually seen Marvel movies and I've seen Oppenheimer. I haven't seen Dunkirk, by the way. So that's the upset of the century. Without any more movie talk here, without further ado, let's get into our Dynasty Rookie Mock Draft. All right, I don't know how we picked the order here, but apparently Nate Tice has the first pick here, which should be the most obvious one of the entire proceedings. But Nate, I will throw it to you. Who is the first overall pick in our Dynasty Mock Draft?
Well, and just it's super flex, tight end premium, sorry. As you love.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being the host of the show. That my bad, folks out there. Yes. Yeah, so let me
host
table
my
set
show
here.
All the time when I'm rambling and speaking bull crap. So
yeah, you owed me one. But you know what? You're right. I didn't want to list off the format settings because I am still irritated that somehow producer Collins strong-armed this into being a tight end premium draft. I mean, enough already with like tight end premium. I'm sure the tight end premium bros are going to light me up in the YouTube comments. But yes, this is a 12 team super flex tight end premium half PPR format. So just so everybody knows, yes, it is a tight end premium for whatever the hell that's worth, but it is a super flex. That is important here. And that will come to pass here in the first three picks. So yes, thank you, Nate, for being the format truther here. I will throw it back to you now to make the first overall pick.
It's because once I've gone super flex, I can't go back. And once I've gone tight end premium, yes. I'm kind of can't go back either. That's kind of how like once I saw that in the notes, I was like, oh, sweet. This is right in my lane. We're good. But also it makes it interesting because quarterbacks are going to be juicy. So it makes it more of an options here than usually you would think. But it's Jeremiah Love is the number one pick. Come on. Running back going to the Cardinals. usage, everything you want to say. Even having a backup in Tyler Allgeier, who's probably disappointed right now, is probably, it's actually good for Jeremiah Love, because you're just talking about wear and tear. This is Dynasty League. You're hoping that you're getting 10 years out of this guy, hopefully. But no, Love is the real deal. Can be, hit the ground running. I think he's smart enough as well to handle protections and handle that stuff as well. So he's going to see it every down roll, can catch the ball. This offense is, you know, the offensive line is actually a little bit better. They invested it with their second round pick in Chase Bisantis. They still need a right tackle, but four of the starting spots are actually pretty good right there. And you look at the rest of their weapons, it's decent. Like, they can, whoever's playing quarterback, but even if it's Jacoby Brissett, they can throw it well enough that teams can't stack the boxes. So will they be in a ton of neutral game scripts? Probably not, but this is not a Genty situation. And I like Love better than Genty anyways, but I think the situation, I know, believe it or not, I do think the Cardinals are in a better spot than where the Raiders were last year or what the Raiders became. So he's the real deal, really good player. And yeah, thought this was a pretty easy decision.
Very easy decision. Boone, Nate and I last year, again, in our mock draft, also Ash and Genty went first overall, as no surprise. He mentioned that this is not a Genty situation. I also, I'm kind of like taking over Nate's weird fascination with the Cardinals, and that he was kind of on Cardinals Island in the two previous seasons under the Drew Petzing offense.
Marooned.
I'm pretty fascinated with the current construction of the offense with Mike LaFleur taking it over. So I am probably a little higher on the Cardinals ecosystem than consensus. But do you have any concerns about this being a Genty situation with Jeremiah Love going to Arizona here?
No, I think he's still going to produce. I have him in redraft as a low end RB1, and then in dynasty as my RB4 overall. I'm not concerned at all. I know there's some questions about the offensive line. I think we're going to get base quarterback play, right? Like, Jacoby Brissett is there. I don't think he's a great real life quarterback, but for fantasy, he can keep the trains on the track. So I think that's going to keep things going well. And there's just so much talent in that offense that defenses are going to have to respect all those pass catchers, and that's going to help Love. So yeah, I think he's going to be fine in year one. We're not going to see a la Oppenheimer. We're not going to see a nuclear year, I don't think, from him. I don't think it's going to be like a top three fantasy season, but low end RB1 stats would be just fine for where he's going.
And Mike LaFleur, their head coach, he really boosted that Rams run game to modernize it a little bit and be more duo-centric. And I think that fits with this offensive line personnel is. So I actually think the offensive line is not going to be great, but it's not going to be bad, and which I was a little scared that would be below average to bad. And so I think even if it's average, yeah, that's going to be a pretty good situation for Love.
Average offensive line, explosive runner. I think that's good enough for him to actually be a fantasy running back one and get those plays that you need him to. But let's go to the second overall pick here. Boone, you're up. Who's the second overall pick?
I mentioned this on our last show, Harmon. I don't know if it's a surprise to everybody, because I know in Superflex, a lot of people want to go quarterback here. But for me, it's Carnell Tate. And it's a combination of him being one of the top receivers in this class, him being a really good prospect coming out, him getting even better draft capital than I expected, and going to an offense where he doesn't have a ton of competition. This guy is going to get a lot of targets right out of the gate. And we've almost kind of seen this story before, and I'm not going to say he's not the same kind of prospect as Malik Nabers by any means, but we've seen a Brian Daboll offense a couple years ago who had Wandale Robinson, who drafted a receiver early, and guess what happened? Wandale Robinson had 140 targets, and that rookie receiver, Malik Nabers, had 170 targets. Now, we talked on the weekend, Harmon, I wasn't calling for 170. I was saying, like, he's going to get at least 120, maybe 140 if we're lucky. I haven't projected over 1,000 yards, and part of it is because I think this offense is going to take a step forward now that they've finally gone out and gotten Cam Ward some real weapons in the passing game, and just based on the fact that there's going to be so much volume on a team that's going to be trailing. I think this is really exciting. I think Brian Daboll being there is going to help them step in the right direction, and for me, Tate is going to be a rock-solid player. He's going to come in. I have him ranked as a low-end wide receiver, too, for fantasy in redraft, and I have him as the top 15 receiver in dynasty.
Yeah, this is just such a clean game. That's why I think everyone liked Carnell Tate. Like, and there might be, you know, now peeking ahead at next year's class, that's the difference between what I consider like a high-end blue-chip receiver as opposed to Tate. But the thing with Tate is that no matter what even happens this year, but future years, he's always going to have a high-end role or a role that deserves touches. Like, he'll never get squeezed out. Like, if they ever want to keep adding to the receiving room, which I think they should do down the road. But I do think that no matter what, you don't have to worry about his role. He's always going to be able to contribute. Also, he's going to have a really good synergy with Cam Ward. Like, even with Cam Ward, kind of, I'm very high on Cam Ward. I really am. Even though I know what the stats look like, but in real football sense, that he's okay, going to be okay. But I do think that some of his creativity and some of the play extension, Carnell Tate's one of the smarter receivers you'll watch. Like, his feel for space, his long arms, his hands, you know, towards the sideline, you know, finding soft spots. So I think there's some really good synergy with Ward as well. So this is another one where the Titans draft class overall really kind of won me over once I saw it completed. But like, at first I was like, oh, that's a little rich for Tate. But now I kind of saw their draft class, and now I'm looking at the room. It's like, okay, you guys did the right thing, because what else they addressed in that draft class? I know that's more real football terms, but I do think in fantasy wise, like, Tate's going to get a lot of touches, and I think he's very smart that he's going to be able to hit the ground running. It's not going to be, he's not more of that freaky guy that's going to take some time. So I think him and Cam Ward are going to be BFFs pretty soon.
I agree with you. He is going to be BFFs with Cam Ward, partially because I looked this up. Oh my God, I can't believe how bad this is. But I looked this up for an article that I did on some of these rookies. According to Fantasy Points data, Titans receivers lined up out wide last season ranked 32nd in yards per reception, 30th in catch rate on catchable targets, 12th lowest contested catch rate, and 7th highest drop rate. Carnell Tate wins on the outside. He catches everything, and he makes explosive plays. So yeah, like, he's going to help in all of those areas. And last year, Tetero McMillan, obviously, I took Travis Hunter at our second overall pick last year, but I said at the time, like, Tetero McMillan, same tier, like, you could have taken him at 1.02. And I have those guys back to back in my stacked prospect rankings just as talents, and they're both going a questionable quarterback. So I think if you could take Tetero last year at 1.02, you can take Carnell Tate at 1.02 here as well. But the guy that I think is kind of a toss up at 1.02 with Tate in Superflex leagues is Fernando Mendoza, who I'm going to go ahead and take here at the third overall pick. And I actually had this choice to make at the second pick in one of my dynasty rookie drafts, because I ended up at the second pick in the lottery. Really pissed I didn't get the first overall pick. That would have helped me a ton with this specific roster. But I ended up going with Tate over Mendoza, even though I think I said on the show with you the other day, Boone, that I probably would go with Mendoza at the second pick in a Superflex. I just felt good about my quarterback room and my wide receiver, as we were talking about before the show, is a lot of these guys that are, I'm hoping this guy gets a couple right breaks, but I just kind of want to lock that receiver position in here. So I do think it's truly a toss up at Superflex at the second spot between Mendoza or Tate, but that makes Mendoza the clear third overall pick here. Nate, I want to throw this one to you because you're kind of the Mendoza guy here at Yahoo Sports. What do you view, like, as a fantasy quarterback? So some of the playmaking varieties, like, as a rusher, what do you think the upside is for Mendoza long term in the league?
Long term, he's probably never ever going to be that high usage runner. Like, I even think that his rushing stats will maybe be, he's big enough to do QB sneaks, so he might get some cheapies there for like some touchdowns. He can do design runs as kind of a change up. So it might be rushing wise, kind of how Trevor Lawrence has been rushing wise. You know, he can sprinkle in a touchdown, sprinkle in some rushing yards, but I think overall, like him, I view him as his upside as being a tier two quarterback. I've likened him to Matt Ryan, and I think MVP Super Bowl run year Matt Ryan is kind of what I expect out of Mendoza, even stat wise. You know, Ryan would sometimes always kind of sit in that upper 20s touchdowns kind of range, mid 3,000, maybe upper yards, 4,000 yard range. Matt Schaub, back in the day, his stats when he was with the Houston Texans, maybe that's kind of one too. So you're not going to really get maybe even Sam Darnold with the Vikings recently. That's like a really good stat, like kind of like line as far as fantasy terms and all that. But I do think this is a perfect offense for him. You might not get as much as you want year one because they have Kirk Cousins and they are going to play Kirk Cousins for a little bit. So look, the schedule comes out this month. So look for that bye week. You know, look for that Thursday game bye week as maybe when the Mendoza time. But I do think Mendoza is a good prospect, not going to be the freak. You know, if it was just a total dynasty startup league, you know, he's not going to be like, oh, Josh Allen tier, all those guys. But one of these guys that sits comfortably in that tier two range, maybe like a Dak, Prescott, kind of how his stats have ended up as a pro, maybe not rookie year Dak or young Dak, who was running a little bit more, but just very efficient, good amount of touchdowns, good amount of yardage, not a top end guy, but again, tier two.
Boone, any Mendoza thoughts?
I'll jump in there. I will say too that if anybody wants to make a strong argument at 102 for pretty much any of the 2 to 5 picks, and I won't spoil it. I mean, everybody knows who the next couple picks are going to be here, but the top three receivers and Mendoza, in my mind, if you feel really strongly about them, go ahead, take them at 102. I'm not going to talk you down. I have them close enough in value. I just put out my updated Dynasty Trade value charts today. They're close enough that you could really go in any direction there. Tate's the way I would go. We talked over the weekend, Harmon, about, for me, a lot of my dynasty teams are set up at the quarterback position. I went out of my way to make sure that all my super flex teams were good at quarterback, so I didn't have to worry. And it's, you know, you hurt me enough times where I'm trying to get through the season with Nick Mullins starting in, you know, week 14 or something. And then you decide you go out and you want to make sure you have stable options at those positions. So that's why I think for me, I definitely shy away from taking Mendoza this early because I don't see him as that truly elite prospect, you know, that 101 type guy that you'd normally get from the first player in the draft. But yeah, for me, I think if you're looking at any of those three receivers or Mendoza in that 102 to 105 range, you can pretty much shuffle them up and take them in any order you want.
All right, Nate, you're up at 4 here.
I'm up at 4, and I am going to take the next drafted skill player, and that is Jordan Tyson for the Saints, formerly of Arizona State, formerly of Colorado. But Jordan Tyson, very twitchy receiver. He's going to be really, I think it's going to complement out, and maybe it hinders Olave's fantasy kind of rank or how you can tier him. And same with Tyson, and the fact that they kind of might eat into each other's roles. They both also have injury concerns. So, you know, there might be weeks where they become the guy for a few weeks and the other guy's the guy for a few weeks. But I think his game complements Chris Olave great. I like where the Saints offense overall is just going. I like their offensive line a lot. That's why they could go receiver here. They also added some other guys in this draft. They also added Oscar Delp at tight end, which I think is going to help their offense down the road more maybe than this year. But Travis Etienne, not ETN. Also added to the offense too with my guy Devin Neal and whatever he's gonna have with Alvin Kamara, which I do think is some weird's going on with Kamara, kind of figuring out what's going on with him long term with the Saints. But at least the running back room is above board, because even if it's just Neal and Achane, that those two complement each other very well. Like, that's a ideal number two to put behind Achane. But why I'm bringing that all up, I don't, with Shuck, I'm not maybe the high guy in Shuck where I'm seeing a lot of people maybe get out of their skis with him, but I do think he's good enough that we got to keep seeing what we got here. And now, and also just fantasy terms, he's good enough to get these guys a freaking ball. Like, it's not like, oh my God, I don't know what's going to, they're not going to get the usage. Like, he's competent enough, competent play caller. And I actually think Tyson, even if he's a little raw and kind of has some loose kind of stuff to his game, because they have Olave on the roster and he doesn't have to be the guy right away, that kind of helps me kind of just compartmentalize him long-term and kind of just be more optimistic about it all. So, I actually kind of thought this one was pretty easy for me to take right here, because I kind of consider him, I would consider these kind of top four, my top four. You know, Love is kind of its own thing, but like, this is the next guy for me, like pretty easily to go with. So I like this fit a lot, even if he does have another receiver eating into some touches.
Yeah, I've talked a lot about how much I like the Tyson to Saints landing spot. Yeah. He did bump up in my post-draft rankings as opposed to my pre-draft rankings here. So I think I would go with Tyson at 4, but Boone, you teased this on our last episode that you're maybe a little higher on a different wide receiver. So I'm curious if that's where you go here at number 5.
Yeah, 105. I'm going with Mekhi Lemon, and I still have Mekhi Lemon ranked above Jordan Tyson. I had Lemon as my number 1 receiver in the class, and it's not me holding on to my priors. It's, I truly believe this is a really solid player, and I think it's hilarious. Like, a great distinction that Nate made just there about Tyler Shuck, for example, is that we've talked about Tyler Shuck, how much we like him. I'm looking at it from a fantasy perspective, right? I don't know that Tyler Shuck is going to be a great quarterback in the NFL, but he showed us last year for half the season he could be a pretty good fantasy quarterback, and he can allow some of those other pieces of the offense to be pretty good fantasy assets as well. I think for Mekhi Lemon, the public perception right now is down on him. And I think a big reason for it is because he's like weirdly slithering in his interviews and like making strange faces and talking weird. And everyone's piled on and everyone's laughing about it. And it even sounds like some of the reports that came out that a lot of the NFL decision makers maybe got rubbed the wrong way by him when it came to some of the interviews and stuff. And yet, I don't know. I'm not that worried about that. I think you are going to be a little eccentric. We always joke about how receivers sometimes have strange personalities. And the fact that he fell a little bit in round one, that concerned me. But he ended up going to a team in the Eagles where they traded up to make sure that they could get him. And they're going to have a huge need there. And I think he's just like a scrappy, kind of feisty player. I think he's going to come in with that chip on his shoulder. And I'm excited about what he could become in this offense, because I think the Eagles offense is going to look different this year, right? It's going to change again. I don't think it could get much worse in terms of the passing game, what we saw last year, but we're expecting that now AJ Brown is going to be out of the picture. Devonta Smith vaults up into the number one spot, and Lemon is going to have an opportunity to take on a very big role in year one. And I've just been behind him the whole time. And I really like the fact that he's going to an offense that I think he can excel in. The only question mark here is Jalen Hurts willing to maybe evolve a little bit with the way this offense could change to kind of facilitate Lemon becoming the player that I hope he can be? And I think that's well within the range of outcomes.
Yeah, luckily, Nate, you and I just talked about this on 301, actually, specifically with Mekhi Lemon and why we're not maybe, I mean, we and you and I are both guys that have not acknowledged Hurts's limitations, but we're maybe a little less concerned about that than the consensus based on how Lemon can be used.
As I've really parsed it and really, because that was my first instinct too, is exactly what kind of the narrative is right now. Like, oh, this isn't a great fit. First off, we have no idea what the heck this offense is going to look like, because I do think, yes, it's been the Jalen Hurts offense, yada, yada, doesn't matter what the coordinator is, but he also has a huge chip on his shoulder. So is he just going to go, you know what? I am going to do this crap. Like, you're going to see when you, like, you never know that with these players. But also, I think some of Lemon's, and you know this better than anyone, Matt, and because of your charting, and you even brought this up on our show, our other show, Football 301, was that he's really good at some of those outbreakers as well. It's not just working over the middle or working just from the slot. He's not just running slants all day, but he's running outbreakers as well. Hurts is a phenomenal outbreaker thrower. Like, that's some of the issues of why he doesn't throw over the middle. He's just like, I'll just throw outside all day. That, so it doesn't have to be a one-to-one, like, yeah, he's not going to throw a lot of digs. But Lemon's not really a dig runner. Lemon's really good, I thought, on over routes. And then those outbreakers, like you brought up, slot fades. Those are things that Hurts is very comfortable throwing it. So even before getting into what Mannion's going to run, where Devonta Smith's going to line up, all that kind of stuff, I actually do think if you just take the, like, exactly what you picture Lemon as without even just kind of imagining anything else, it actually fits Hurts a little bit better. It's not square peg, round hole.
Yep.
It's like square peg, rectangle hole, you know, like it's okay. It kind of fits, you know, like it's kind of fits. It's not perfect, but it kind of fits. So that I'm not as negative on this as maybe as I first was within the first 24 hours after the pick.
I will also say, just to put a bow on my point from earlier about like the public perception on players, I have a ton of George Pickens in Dynasty. And why was that? That was because when George Pickens was coming out, not the same prospect by any means, but in terms of like some of the weirdness, some of the strange interviews, and it caused him to like fall down dynasty boards a little bit. Yep. And I was fortunate that my teams are pretty competitive. I was picking at the end of the first round and I got a ton of George Pickens because of it. And I think he's gone on. I mean, we'll see what happens this year with his contract. That I might be regretting saying this right now, because this might be the worst year in terms
you
of
always George have Pickens 2025, attitude, baby.
Yeah, he has proven since he entered the league that he is a great receiver and a great fantasy asset. And I think Lemon could do the same.
Yeah, and even if Lemon is a mercurial wide receiver, if that's the guy he becomes, he's going to a place that just dealt pretty well until things fell apart with a mercurial personality at the wide receiver position. So I think they should be pretty good at that. Yeah, we showed the route chart earlier, if you're watching with us on YouTube, that like, yeah, some of his best stuff, as Nate mentioned, Mekhi Lemon, it's outcuts, whether they're quick out routes, like flat routes, deeper outs. His best stuff over the middle is probably post routes, which when Eagles fans try to say, hey, here's a bunch of clips of Jalen Hurts throwing over the middle of the field, usually it is like big post. It's actually big post routes. It's not those dig routes and things of that nature. So yeah, I'm
fine, but you're wrong when you say that. It's not exactly, yes, that's not what we're talking about, but yes, you're technically right.
Yeah, you're directionally accurate. And I think that Mekhi Lemon can be a good fit there because of that. Okay, so you guys have left me the head versus heart pick here at sixth overall. This is where
should we say here, like, this is a big cliff. This is a big cliff in terms of value and tiers. And in my mind, anyway, there is a big drop off from 105 to 106. Do you feel the same?
I think this is the last of this group. That to me.
Yeah. This is the last of this group. And this is where I have ultimately settled. The sixth pick should be Casey Concepcion over Jadarian Price. I know Jadarian Price is the post-draft riser. And obviously, like, he's in for a great, he got a great landing spot, like the biggest winner in fantasy out of round one, without a doubt. He's got just a clear path. I did tweet this out, like the list of first round running back picks over the last, you know, since I believe the year 2006. So the last 20 years, all of the flaming busts at, you know, running back. Like, there have obviously been some bad top 10 picks, but for the most part, like, running backs go in the top 10 end up working out. The guys that don't work out are towards the back half of the first round. That doesn't mean that Jadarian Price isn't going to work out, and I he's going to come off the board here very soon, spoiler alert. But ultimately, like, I just think I love Casey Concepcion's fit with Todd Monken in the Browns offense. I know there's quarterback questions, but nevertheless, like, I think that he is going to, I think he's going to lead the Browns in targets in year one. And if they get a quarterback in 2027 and beyond, like, then he's really going to see that bump in value. So to me, because I'm so high on the player, I think this is the lowest he will be regarded from a value standpoint. Dynasty is his rookie year. It can only go up from here. So I'm really rooting for Todd Monken to hang on here because I think he's such a good offensive coach. And I really think he's going to deploy Casey Concepcion in a great way. So ultimately, just because I think he's got more long-term value, does Casey over a guy like Jadarian Price, I ultimately went with Casey, who I think is the last guy in this tier. Because I had these guys as the same tier pre-draft. Like, I had him in this group from a pre-draft standpoint. Right. I might be a little bit on an island in that regard. But Boone, you think there's a drop off from five to six here?
I do. Concepcion is the sixth pick in my mind. I think he belongs here, but I think you could make a case that this is like a two-man tier with him and Price. And, you know, depending on needs, if you want to take that chance on a running back, you know, depending on the settings in your league too, how many running backs are you starting? You know, how difficult is it to trade for that position? Because I know different leagues, you know, it can be more difficult to trade for certain positions when it comes to dynasty. But yeah, I'm with you that it's Concepcion. I just see a drop off from those top three receivers and the offenses that they ended up in. And maybe it's just the Browns thing. Maybe that's the wart that it's putting on his profile for me now. And the fact that they went out and also got Denzel Boston fairly high. But yeah, without knowing what's going to get come out of that quarterback situation, and it sounds like it's going to be Deshaun Watson starting this year, I don't feel particularly confident about Watson or Shedeur Sanders. So we'll see if one of those guys can get something out of them. And yes, Todd Monken, a strong chance potentially to get this passing game going in the right direction, but it's going to really come down to whether they can get the quarterback play to get these guys performing for fantasy.
This is, I really like Concepcion. I think me and Matt really kind of started steaming each other up about him a little bit, going like, I like him. No, I like him. Like, kind of like I was waiting for one of us to kind of cool each other down kind of thing. And I keep bringing this up with Monken, though, is that he is really good at adapting to his personnel. And right now, when I look at the Browns, the thing that I trust the most is the vet O-lineman, which is weird because they're all new, and Quinshon Judkins and Harold Fannin, I guess, a little bit. But I think Monk is going to turn this into very run heavy, which might make some weird things as far as usage with the receivers, at least this year. But I actually think we'll know a lot more as the season goes along. Oh, duh, you know, with any rookie. But I do think that early on, if there's some disappointing, like, man, Concepcion and Boston, they're just not doing it, I think Monken's going to be run heavy. And also, you don't want your, we're just saying, who's playing quarterback for them? They are probably feeling the same way. And that's not, you're not going to be pass heavy. But having said that, they might be having to come from behind. So that could lead some passes. But
yeah,
if you look at the skill guys, I think they trust the O-line and Quinshon Judkins the most, maybe Harold Fannin as well. But I do think that's where they're going to kind of lean towards, because Monk is fine being run heavy. But having said that, I really think Concepcion's talented. This could end up being a good spot, especially if they have the number one pick and they get Arch Manning next year, for him to like really turn into something. So this is more of a long-term play, which that's what Dynasty's about. But that there's risk, but it's like this could really be good because they have some stuff going on for them right now.
All right. Well, since this was a tier break here, we all agreed with that. Let's take our first break here. When we come back on the other side, we're going to continue our Dynasty Rookie Mock Draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. And Nate, you are up at the 7th overall pick. Kind of spoiled who it's probably going to end up being, but let's hear it here.
Yeah, this is really, it kind of made a decision near me or easy for me. It was just looking at the running back class. So that's Jerrion Price. And I know running backs are hard to find, especially in dynasty leagues, especially guys that you really want to buy into that aren't splitting a backfield or injury concerns, just something, just getting one of these guys. But if you look at the Seahawks situation, not only just for this year, Zach Charbonnet is a free agent after this year, even if he is coming back from injury. You look at the rest of that backfield. George Halani was fine as some preseason reps or whatever. They're not investing in George Halani long term. So you're going to get run with Price, no matter, again, kind of just using that. Like, you're going to get be able to buy a few years here. It's not just 2026. Well, I do think that's an appeal of this. But he fits a great offense for any back, a zone run heavy scheme with Brian Fleury, who's a Shanahan guy. They wanted to keep the good times going. And although I wanted them to address their right guard spot, this offensive run game really improved last year. It went from, like, it was pretty frustrating the first couple months, and this is a part of why that they won the Super Bowl. I know the Kenneth Walker stuff happened in the playoffs, but even before that, with Charbonnet out there, the run game turned into like a top 12-ish run game, which is like, duh, it's a Shanahan offense. But I do think with another year of an experience for everybody, even more auxiliary parts, that's just going to boost it up. And Price, who I consider more of a late second, early third type, I liked him. I think he does a lot of things well. I can see why coaches loved him, because he fits in every type of scheme. He can catch the ball, he can play special teams, and he can pass protect. So coaches are going to love that. So between opportunity, his talent, just everything. Like, I feel like this is a pretty fun pick to have at 107 in this class. Like, this is a guy, I have a lot of picks, kind of tells you how my dynasty years went. I have a lot of picks kind of this range, and I'm just Price is my guy. Like, I'm just like, I want to get him, especially just to boost up my running back room. So that's, I think this is a great opportunity. He's not the overwhelming purple chip talent, but this is a great opportunity.
Yeah. We had talked before the draft about how we could get ourselves in trouble again, like we have in the past, not just Harmon and I specifically, but dynasty managers, when there isn't an obvious pick in the second half of the first round. Sometimes we do steam up running backs that go to good situations, and we might talk about a couple of those guys when we get to the second round.
Yes.
And that's my only concern here, right? We have the failures that we've seen at the end of round one. We have the, you know, history maybe not on our side in terms of, you know, pairing a guy and going, okay, well, we got a great landing spot, it's definitely going to work out. That's when sometimes we make big mistakes. And yet, I think the range of outcomes here is massive, because there is potentially a downside where he doesn't hit, he's not the guy, they have to go with more of a committee, and fantasy wise, he's not great. There's also like a ceiling that I don't think enough people are talking about here, that what if he is the guy? Are we that worried about Emmanuel Wilson and George Halani, like you mentioned, and Charbonnet's not going to be back until late in the season, if at all. So there is a really big ceiling here, and I think that makes him definitely worthy of the 107 and potentially the 106, like I said earlier, depending on your needs.
Yeah, Charbonnet didn't have surgery on his ACL until February 20th. So
yeah, like, they had to clean stuff up, like swelling or something. Yeah, that's right.
It is going to be a minute till he's back. And that's a great point, Nate, that like he's not contractually tied to this team after this year. So Price is going to get a big runway. But yeah, just since I mentioned it, I'll just note it here. These are the running backs that have been drafted after pick 25 in the first round since the year 2006. D'Angelo Williams, Donald Brown, Rashad Penny, Mark Ingram, Javid Best, Joseph Addai, Beanie Wells, Doug Martin, Sony Michel, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, David Wilson, and now Jadarian Price. The only guys who averaged over 75 yards from scrimmage per game in their careers was Javid Best, Joseph Addai, and Doug Martin. Like, that's it. D'Angelo Williams had a couple moments, obviously, but there's several guys. I mean, Penny, 48 yards from scrimmage per game. Donald Brown, 43. Beanie Wells, 54. CEH, 52. That feels high to me. But yeah, so obviously that is the history working against Price, but he has such a clear runway here in a good offense that actually is going to use his type of skill set. So no problem making him the seventh overall pick here. I do think right here is where it gets really muddy. And I think there's almost no consensus at this point. So Boone, you get to kick off the muddy area of the first round of Dynasty Rookie Drafts. Let's hear it.
Well, there's one thing that makes this a little easier for our draft. I would say in regular leagues that aren't tight end premium, this is like a massive cliff. It's a little bit of a smaller cliff to that Concepcion price range. After it, it is a complete massive cliff. And there's like four or five guys you could consider here. And really, I think you could make a case for any of them. Because this is tight end premium, which you love, Harmon, I think it's Kenyon Sadiq. I think you go with him, and you don't necessarily expect that you're going to get great stats year one and maybe not even be able to start him in year one because there's so many weapons now, which seems so strange to say, but we talked about it on the weekend, Harmon. There are a lot of potential guys asking for the ball now in that Jets offense that we still don't really know whether they're going to be able to support more than one or two of them. But there are a lot of guys in that offense now. You look around, it's pretty talented in terms of the skill position guys there. Sadiq steps in. It's hard to give him a big enough projection where you're going to say, yeah, that's a guy that you're going to be able to start this season. And yet I think you take him here because of what he could become, a high-end prospect, a guy that has that pass-catching upside, a guy who's really, really an exciting player. You just give him a bit of a hit here. I think if he went to a different offense, we'd be talking about him in that previous tier and potentially up with a guy like Concepcion in tight end premium.
Yeah.
And yet, because he's with the Jets, I think we got to bump him down and you put him at the 108.
And Nate, I'm going to throw this to you because I'm taking Omar Cooper Jr. at 9. And I think in a non-tight end premium league, I would take Omar Cooper Jr. at 8 ahead of Kenyon Sadiq. But I want to hear your thoughts. I want to hear your thoughts on this because Boone and I talked a little bit about it on the Sunday show. Saturday show. I had like a 20-minute conversation about this with James Coe yesterday. So we're not gonna have a 20-minute conversation about this here. But when I just think about Sadiq and Omar Cooper together, I struggle to see how their roles both coexist with the roster on paper right now. Because I think in some fantasy land, like literally fantasy, not fantasy football, literally fantasy land, you can play Garrett Wilson at X and Omar Cooper at Z when we're in 12 personnel and Mason Taylor's your inline guy and Kenyon Sadiq is your move guy. But so very often, because I have made this mistake before, teams just end up throwing out their X receiver as the X receiver for most of the time. And Adee Mitchell has the most X receiver skill set on the team. Think about like the Packers and Romeo Doubs. Like that's why he's always the number one snap player on the Packers when he's been there. And in that world, well, okay, Cooper is only on the field in 11 personnel as a slot-only guy, and Sadiq's only on the field as the – because I don't know if he's going to be the inline guy over Mason Taylor. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know. But if that's the case, it's going to be kind of hard for Cooper and Sadiq to coexist together in a Frank Reich offense that played 11 personnel on 87% of its snaps the last time we saw him in 2023. So I just think like these two guys being on the team – to get, it's not even just like, oh, they're the Jets. Like, I actually think this Jets offense does look good on paper. It's these two guys coexisting together on the offense, Nate, that I think makes it a little difficult to project, like, who is the fantasy winner and loser from them ending up together.
Well, not only just difficult to project on paper, too, it's just like they might have also like knocked themselves out of a top pick because they're actually too competent. It's actually like they actually have a more competence, but that's like a little too much if an issue. I'm right there with you. It's like they truly went best player available with Sadiq. Like that's what they did. That was their philosophy on it. It's kind of, they're a weird team right now where I think the GM is just building a team for everybody after this year as opposed to what this year is too. And also Frank Reich, he's not the most creative play caller or play user, or as far as like formations and stuff, he's very traditional, very NFL traditional, which there's some appeal to that. Like actually sure. The guy that I think would be the biggest benefit of that is Adee Mitchell, because like you said, he would use him like a true X, but how this whole makeup is, you got to look also what they've invested in. So this regime has their guys are going to be Sadiq, Taylor, Cooper, you know, Garrett Wilson is kind of like, yeah, we like you, but it's also like kind of the stepchild, it feels like sometimes, even though he's talented. So I'm just saying all that, it's just messy. So Taylor will be the inline Y. He's not idealistic to be an inline guy. But he's pretty good, especially in zone schemes, which should fit this offense. Sadiq has to be an off-ball player. I think Frank Reich, I was looking it up. I think Frank Reich, when he had Jack Doyle, they did run a lot of like 12 stuff and a lot of hip formation stuff. But again, that was going to the Y. You know, that it's just he's so traditionally minded, and how those guys use second tight ends isn't how kind of like modern. He's modern enough, but like more new age offenses use these guys. So I agree. There's just a lot of sameness. And also with Sadiq, the type of player he is, and we talked about this pre-draft, Matt, a little bit. There's more like he's not the like Trey McBride going to run 15 stick routes and he's going to get a whole lot of targets and just be a vacuum and then just get some yards and all that. He's going to be kind of a shot play guy and kind of like a design touch guy or like, you know, some screens. And so he's going to be very spike weaky. Like there's going to be weeks where he has a four catch, 120 yard game with a touchdown, and the next week he has zero catches. And that's just why I'm a little worried with this, not worried with the Sadiq stuff, but just why I have a little hesitations with all this as well. Like he's not going to get, it's the premium is on catches, you know, receptions. If he only gets two, that's not much of a premium, you know, that you're getting from having the highly drafted tight end. We talked about there's a little Kincaid here, Dalton Kincaid going on, where it's like, on a usage stuff, like when all those shot plays and all those wheel routes, it's great. Why isn't he always on the field? I think Sadiq has better blocking chops than Kincaid, but just a little more of a specific player. So I'm right there with you guys. I like both of these players. I kind of see what the Jets are doing, but they have so many mouths to feed. I just don't think Frank Reich's kind of that guy to sort it out into a satisfying manner. What I will say of all that, the ball will find the talent. Geno Smith will find the talent. The players find the talent. This kind of stuff sorts itself out. It's just not like a great team right now that I'm like, oh yeah, this is going to all go hunky dory. It's going to be ugly at times. So I don't know. It's like, I like the talent. I like some of the situation stuff, but I also just like, I'm kind of avoiding Jets players right now. As I say that, Breece Hall on a couple of my rosters and A.D. Mitchell on a couple of my rosters as well.
It's great for Jets fans. It's great for the Jets offense. And I think that these players can all be pretty good this year, but I just don't know that I'm going to have like a strong take on any Jets players in fantasy. And that includes these two guys in dynasty leagues. But I do think that Sadiq is the eighth pick. Cooper is the ninth pick. Just a little bit of shine off both. Not because they landed with the Jets. Jets fans, don't take it the wrong way. They took it the wrong way when I was talking about this yesterday on Twitter. It's not because they're with the Jets. It's just because they're on the team together. And I think it's Frank Reich trying to solve the problem. That's what makes it tough here. But I still like taking Omar Cooper Jr. at the ninth pick. Nate, you are up with the 10th pick here. Let's try to get through these last three picks the first round pretty quickly here.
Sorry, my last little Frank Reich stat. When he was with the Colts, they ran two or fewer receivers 34% of the time. So not with the Panthers, but always he's about a one-third of the time he's two or fewer receivers, meaning 12 personnel, 21, yada, yada. So that is notable that he's fine sitting in that one-third of the time. All right, my next one. Tight end premium, Eli Stowers for the Eagles. This is a guy that really grew on me in the scouting process because I kind of was like, oh, you're receiving only tight end, whatever. Bye-bye, Mike Gesicki. He is way better of a talent than Mike Gesicki ever was. I called him a Tino, tight end in name only, but he's the good version of that. Like he can truly be a power slot that can win against DBs because he's just so he plays like his testing. As opposed to one of these tight ends that tests like crazy, and you're like, where is that on film? He plays like that. He's got great hands. I think this year will be he's a year away from being a year away. I really do think that he'll be kind of specific touches. You don't really trust him in line to be a blocker. So I think a lot of his usage this year will be shot plays, screens, RPOs. I think will be a part of this offense that fits. I'm betting on the talent here. Like, that's really what this is. It's somewhat situation. Dallas Goedert will probably be gone after this year. There's not a lot of tight ends on this roster with long-term investment. This is the guy I'm kind of betting on, just pure talent going to a competent franchise. So this is a pick for 2029 or 2028 more than 2026. But the ceiling of this is the best receiving tight end in the NFL. Like really, that's the ceiling of Stowers.
I think this whole range from Sadiq, Cooper, Stowers, or the guy that I'm going to take next here in Ty Simpson, I think they're all sort of like a year away. Like you're hoping that the Jets, as much as you talked about Frank Reich there, you're kind of hoping that next year, maybe new coaching staff, maybe new quarterback, maybe things look a little bit different. Maybe we shuffle the deck with some of the other skill position guys there. Stowers, same kind of thing. Dallas Goedert out of the way. We know AJ Brown's going to be gone. Okay, could he come on this year or will it be next year? Probably. And then my pick here is Ty Simpson at the 111. And I don't know, guys, like, I don't like this pick. I didn't want to make this pick. I was hoping one of you guys were going to do it. And yet I think this is more of a dynasty pick because I don't really believe in the talent. I know he got the draft capital. I know it's a good team, a good offense that he's going to. Good coaching staff as long as Sean McVay is still there by the time that Simpson's starting. And yet I think you're taking this pick from a dynasty perspective because I think it's going to hold its value because we've seen other guys come along like Jordan Love, where if they're not starting, if they're just sitting and they have that draft capital, the hope remains and maybe you can move them along the way. Like right now, I don't know that you could get a 2027 first or even a 2028 first for one of these late first round picks this year, like Ty Simpson. But if you hold Simpson and then a year goes by, we get a little bit closer potentially to now him starting, his value might tick up a little bit. You might be able to move him for something that you actually need, which is exactly how I'll play it if I have to take Simpson.
Might see him this year if Stafford's back flares up.
Always a possibility.
Always a possibility. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, no, look, I like the pick here, Boone. I don't think you should be feeling too bad about it against, especially in Superflex, because like Simpson can scoot a little bit. He's got more arm talent than I think he's given credit for. And yeah, you could be sooner than later looking at the starting quarterback for the Los Angeles Rams, which is not a bad thing whatsoever. And because the rest of these picks are murky here at the end of the first round in Superflex, I actually like your pick of Ty Simpson here. As a matter of fact, I was kind of hoping he was going to fall to me at the end of the first round here, but I'm also going to take a guy to round us out here in a might be a year away type player, and I'm going to end up with the other Browns rookie wide receiver, even though these are not like the same, these are not teams or whatever, but I'm going to end up with Denzel Boston here. They're not teams. I don't know if I would advise this necessarily in your real dynasty drafts, loading up on Casey and Denzel Boston, but no, Boston is a great prospect to me. I love him paired long term with Casey Concepcion, and yeah, I mean, I think Jerry Jeudy, this will be his last year on the roster, and as a matter of fact, I wouldn't even be surprised if by the end of the year in two receiver sets it's Denzel Boston at X and Casey Concepcion at Z. Like, that wouldn't shock me one bit. They can say Jerry Jeudy's their bell cow receiver. I don't put any stock in that. Number one, I've never heard bell cow receiver as a term before, so that was interesting from Andrew Berry. But I'm not buying that long term. I think that Boston will be the guy there, and Boston's a good prospect. So again, we're hoping for these Browns and Jets guys that they get a good quarterback next year in this class that Nate is saying is going to be a good class next year.
Yep, that's it. And why they have to go on the same team? That's kind of my regret, because there's like two guys I was targeting, two guys this, and they end up on the same team. I'm like, well, shoot, now I have to pick. Like, I have a lot of picks in this kind of range, so I'm kind of like, God dang, that's what's probably going to happen, because there's some teams that I'm like, these are two guys I identified. This team situation does matter to me, but there's sometimes my tiebreaker is like, who do I like better in the pre-draft process? I really like both of these guys. So I do think that if it idealistically works out, they have perfect synergy together. Like, they really do. These are the exact two guys that should play together. With Harold Fannin as the three, that could be really cool. I love that trio of players. So hopefully it works out. I really like Boston. I was probably the highest guy nationally on him. That I think he could be a true blue X, a ball winner type. Even if he ends up just more of a number two, I really do still like that. So I think that's a great pick at 112. Like, I of the other guy, like, if you want more, maybe something more solidified, I guess, maybe the other guys that we just took, I actually kind of like it decently.
Yep, and unlike Sadiq and Cooper, I don't think their snaps, Casey and Boston, will be affected by each other, at least not long-term. Not long-term, and probably not as rookies either. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're heading into the second round of our Dynasty Rookie Draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and we're starting off our second round of our Dynasty Rookie Mock Draft here. Nate Tice, you are back on the clock at the first pick of the second round.
God, I made some great trades to have this many picks. But I have, next one up, one of my favorite player team fits, something called my shot at the combine that I totally forgot about until the pick happened. Thought it would be a round or two earlier. Jonah Coleman to the Broncos. Drafting a lot of running backs if this were one team, but no, this is just the general mock. But no, Jonah Coleman, I love this fit. Again, it's a slim pickings running back class, and really he was one that I have as my running back three. At one point, I maybe had him overpriced, but then price I kind of like solidified. It was maybe a tier, half tier above. But I had him a third round grade on him. He's not the sexiest runner in the world. He doesn't have long speed, but he's exactly what the Broncos need. They need a guy that kind of keeps them on track, stay ahead of the chains. He's not, again, he's a singles and doubles hitter, but he's going to get on the field early because he's exceptional in pass protection. He's a good enough receiver, and he can, again, run in short yards and between the tackles. So even whatever you think about R.J. Harvey, regardless of what he is, this guy Coleman's going to have a role, and a pretty good one, I think. So this one, again, this is one of the guys I'm circling, targeting in this range, especially with running backs always being something hard to find. He could turn into a heavier usage guy too. I think he has the bulk for that. Not going to be the sexiest guy. You're hoping for the perfect archetype, that worked out situation, everything is Kyren Williams. That's the perfect like situation, everything. I don't think he'll ever get that production because the Rams and what they do and everything different than Sean Payton. But and Sean Payton's always going to rotate these backs, but he can handle the touches. And if there's an injury, it's going to be more touches. So yeah, really like Coleman. I like this fit a ton. I think he's a perfect run fit for this scheme. So yeah, really like this one.
I would say that there's also a surprisingly big range for him going from, I think you could make a case for him potentially at the end of the first round if you're in a league that favors running backs, like I mentioned earlier, maybe you start three running backs, I'm in some of those, point per carry leagues, things like that. I also saw him go as low as the 206, which I was very shocked that that happened in one analyst draft today. So there's a pretty big window there, but I think this is the spot to take him. The nice little kind of window is early in the second round, and I think it's a great pick there, Nate.
Thanks, man. I really like Jonah Coleman too, not just because he came on the show and was awesome on the show. Great interview. Oh. If you guys haven't checked out that pre-draft with Jonah Coleman, he was on the show. He was awesome. Just a total delight. I also think he's kind of like Pierre Thomas-ish if we're doing former Saints backs with Sean Payton. Like he could be the Pierre Thomas type in this offense where he plays in both phases, not just an early down banger, but gets in on the passing down stuff too. Like just good, reliable player. So like Jonah Coleman here. I like him so much that I was on the clock in an actual dynasty rookie draft during our mock rookie draft show at 2.02 and I took Jonah Coleman. So I'm endorsing Nate Tice's pick here of Jonah Coleman at 2.02 in our fake draft. And that was a team that desperately needs running backs. So I definitely don't mind taking Jonah Coleman. It's not even close to weird territory just yet, although it's going to get weird here pretty soon. Some day three picks are going to miss. We already had a day three pick fly off the board. We're going to get several more day three picks in this second round. Boone, you're up. And you're going to take a player here I really like at 2.02, so let's hear it.
Yeah, I wrote about him as one of my favorite kind of sleeper prospects leading up to the draft. And then I wrote about him after day two when he got picked as a sneaky player who went on day two who could have major fantasy upside, and it's Antonio Williams going to the Commanders. I don't want to make this all about Brandon Ayuk, but who else is coming to save that Commanders receiving core, right? They have Terry McLaurin. Great. They brought in Chigakonkwo at tight end. Maybe. Kind of interested in him as like a late round sleeper for fantasy at tight end. And then what? And to me, the what is Antonio Williams. He fits really nicely with McLaurin there. Can do a lot of work from the slot, like a really enticing player in my mind in terms of kind of volume that he could get in this offense and maybe the kind of volume that he has to get, because right now, Brandon Ayuk, we can revisit it. The expectation is that he's going to end up in Washington, that Washington has wanted him for a while. There's the connection with Jaden Daniels. The latest reports that are out there is he's not returning anyone's phone calls, whether it be the 49ers or other teams. Now, is that just a play by him to try to force the 49ers to release him and get this process going? Maybe. But we've talked about it, Harmon. When players like this step away from the game, when they don't play for a couple years, I think there's a lot of questions about whether he can get back to being a productive NFL player. We're hoping that he can. Yep. We'd love to see him do it. And yet at the moment, I'm not convinced that that is actually going to be the way this works out. And if he doesn't show up there, or if he shows up and he's nowhere near the same kind of player, Antonio Williams is the number two receiver in this offense. And you can get him in the second round in rookie dynasty drafts where there is not a lot in the second round that we feel great about. So for me, I'm taking him all day at the top of the second round.
You guys took, and then we'll get to Matt's pick in a sec. You guys took two guys. I'm like, they won't take these two guys. And then you guys went boom, boom, back to back with guys that I really liked for my next pick. But no, this is one that Williams was the guy. I always struggle with slot only guys. I rank him always lower than general, than maybe the consensus on some things. But he's the guy I like of that slot only archetype because he was so smooth and just reliable. And it's a, even though I preferred that they maybe addressed it with an outside receiver, it's like, well, if you did go, it wasn't Zachariah Branch. It was Antonio Williams. It's like, okay,
yeah,
at least you went for this guy, not really truly the gadget slot only guy. This is a route runner type. You maybe, this ain't maybe perfect, but there's some Christian Kirk to him a little bit. You know, as far as maybe what he ends up becoming, I actually like Williams, some of the craftiness he's got a little bit better than Kirk when he was coming out. So I just really like, I think he's just Mr. Reliable. Like this guy's going to annoy opposing fan bases. Like I think he ends up always being maybe a secondary guy, a number two, but I think Daniels is always going to be willing to chuck it and willing to give him targets. And I think he can always just be that steady diet guy. So yeah, I really like the player and I end up liking this fit. In the moment I liked it, but it's like, I like this a lot, especially when you look at the rest of the receiving core. I also like Chig as a flyer in tight end redraft league, in redraft leagues. I like him as kind of my, you know, if I take like a volatile guy, maybe as another kind of little secondary second tight end there, because I think this is gonna be a good opportunity for him. He's a little more explosive than Zach Ertz, and Jaden Daniels was thrown to Zach Ertz quite a bit, for better or for worse.
For better or for worse is a good way to say that. I think Antonio Williams, like, I think there's a teardrop to Williams to the next guys. And I know like some of that's not in line with draft capital, but you know, we kind of talked about this last show, Boone, that I think this is the year to kind of not completely forget about draft capital, but to like break, not always break ties in favor of it just because the class is so tight and weird and kind of murky here. And yep. I thought there was a teardrop from Williams to the other tier two guys. Like I think Williams can play a little bit outside and be a Z in two receiver sets. And yeah, I mean, nobody loved Brandon Ayuk at his peak more than me. I don't even know what the hell we're going to get. And yeah, if we're even going to get him on the phone anytime soon. So yeah, I think it's very live that Antonio Williams is the wide receiver too for this Washington Commanders team. And he's just plug and play. Like he's plug and play in an offense that's going to feature the slot player. But like I said, it goes against draft capital to take Antonio Williams. And now I'm going to actually defer to draft capital here. And I'm taking Dazon Stribling at the 2.03 pick. I'm not totally deferring to draft capital because I actually liked Stribling pre-draft. And it's funny, Nate, you and I were just talking about this. Like, I liked Stribling as a day two draft pick. And then the Niners took him at the very first pick of day two. I'm like, well, wait. When I said day two, I thought more like early third round. I like Dazon Stribling, but they really like Dazon Stribling. But so here's the thing, though. I think for a lot of dynasty draft folks, because it's so analytics based, it's so production model based, like Stribling, you don't even have to take him here. I guarantee you, like, I've been drafting on other platforms and you got to like scroll down to find Dazon Stribling on the list because he was not like the dynasty community was just a little bit behind where Stribling was going to be drafted by the NFL. And maybe the dynasty analysts end up being right and Stribling is terrible, but I actually think he's a useful player. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like he's not perfect by any means. There's definitely areas where he needs to develop, but I like the growth and promise of his release moves. I think he can work over the middle of the field. Great hands, is a bully after the catch, and can block in the run game, and he landed on a really, really good offense. Like, again, I know the pre-draft profile from a production standpoint is a little, is definitely a little hit and miss. He's working against history of recent Ole Miss receivers. Nevertheless, I think there's a lot more appeal to Stribling, and I'm comfortable taking him at the top of the second round. Boone, I know what Nate thinks about Stribling because we've talked about him. What do you think about Stribling, new 49ers wide receiver here?
Well, he went at the 207 in the draft that I'm doing right now, so it's not that far off from where I think he might go in some rookie drafts. I also think, and we talked about this a bit on Saturday, that even if he does start off, and I think he will as the fourth receiver there, there could be a lot of opportunity very quickly. We don't want to try to predict injuries, but man, between Mike Evans and Ricky Pearsall and Christian Kirk, like these guys don't have the most durable profiles, right? So we could very quickly see Stribling out there getting a lot of playing time and maybe even stepping up and having big games the way we saw Juwan Jennings do that, or Kendrick Bourne did that last season for a game or two, or even DeMarcus Robinson.
Hell yeah.
Like other guys have stepped up in this offense. So why not the guy that they took early in the second round, right? It's totally plausible. And I think it's a good pick in this range.
Yeah, I'm fine. What Matt even said, he said, I was high on him and then the 49ers just like broke that and went even higher. I was probably nationally one.
It's like these, I'm trying to defend the 49ers, and I think people are still like, this guy was going to go in the fourth round. He was not going to be a day three draft pick. He was going to be a day two pick. So they've made it kind of tough, Nate, for us to defend him because they took him 33rd overall. But still, spiritually, we're in the exercise.
We are. Yeah. I had him right around 50 on my big board. Him in Boston, I was probably the two receivers. I was high, the high guy, I think, nationally, you know, all the people that kind of do big boards. And you tweeted this like about how the coaches like this, Matt, or I think you were quote tweeting somebody. And I replied to you. I go, oh yeah, he's coach's catnip. Like this is the type of guy that coaches just love. And that's why I love him. It's just everything, because he just does it all. He seems smart. Like he's always in the right spot. He's always he never has a lot of bad plays, even if he's not truly, truly exceptional. And also just the blocking and the physicalness, mm-hmm. you know, the physicality, that's going to win teams over. And when evaluators over, and I'm not shocked that Shanahan was like, yeah, I want this guy. He compliments Ricky Pearsall long-term very well. I think, you know, even with the Mike Evans experiment going on this year,
yep.
George Kittle is coming off an Achilles. There's going to be plenty of touches to go around, especially I think Stribling can be he's the Juwan Jennings replacement. He is. He's a power mm-hmm. slot that can go inside, outside. He can be on the field in two wide receiver sets. And also, because he's such a good blocker, he'll be on the field in one wide receiver sets. And that there's some benefit to that, because that's where you see some shot plays happening. So he can get kind of spiked there. And also Kyle Shanahan, another competitive guy that, you know, likes having chips on his shoulder. He's going to try and make a lot of people feel wrong about what they've been saying the last month or last week. So guess who's going to get a lot of touches, I think, and a lot of stuff going for him. So even again, he's a smart player. He went to three different stops, was productive at every stop. And all those stops, too, all the coaches raved about him. So I think he's going to see the field very early. And that's why I'm going to say, like, I'm full-blown defending it, because I did think Stribling was a little rich. But hearing their argument about how he probably wouldn't be there, that I understand as well. So I was probably I didn't crush them completely in the grading. I actually thought the Kaylon Black was probably a little more squint-worthy than anything. But Stribling, I don't squint as much as maybe other people did, because I do see the skill set that people like.
All right, Nate, give me your next pick. You're up next. Here at 2.04.
Yeah, speaking of, we're getting into the funk right here. I went with Oscar Delp, tight end for the Saints. And I'm really liking what the Saints are building. I think a lot of people are. Like, if at this point in time, if you said they're the favorites in the NFC South, which isn't like, you know, anything really to write home about, but they probably are, because I like where the O-line is. I think the quarterback, Tyler Shuck, I know we just talked about this on Football 301, Matt. The quarterback is at the very least competent enough to run that offense, even if, again, it's not the high end. Oh, no, I just talked about that a little bit ago with Jordan Tyson. It's all merging together. He's at least competent enough to run this offense. But same with Delp, is that even with Juwan Johnson on the roster, like Delp, tight ends are always going to take time. He's going to have a role right away because he has some Y that you can project with him. He can play in line as a blocker. Kellen Moore got a lot out of Jake Ferguson. And Delp kind of compares to that a little bit. I think Ferguson was a little bigger coming out of Wisconsin. But Delp has that ability to be a field stretcher on seam routes. They run a lot of forward stuff and also stay on the field and in line. So going to maybe take some time. You know, Johnson's going to be the guy a little bit, but he's going to have a role right away as the blocker type. So I'm going to go with Delp. You know, this is tight end premium, and this is the range we're getting to. Even if I had a couple other guys higher, including a guy that maybe Matt took in the pre-draft process, I just like the situation a lot with the Saints. I think this is an offense I can really buy into.
Yeah, I really like that call. This is the range. When you get closer to like the middle of the second round, in tight end premium, there should be a bunch of these tight ends that are going off the board. Yeah. And I think you could make a case for at least three guys that I like quite a bit based on their landing spots. Some of them that maybe bumped up a little bit because of that, you can get yourself into trouble with that, but definitely don't shy away. We talked before the draft about how round three and beyond could just be filled with tight ends, but that wasn't just tight end premium. That was just regular leagues and tight end premium. You're definitely starting to take this range of these guys in the mid second round.
Yeah. Love the Saints offense. Really like Oscar Delp being a potential inline guy there. Boone, give us your pick here at 2.05.
We're talking about a bunch of guys that you might have to wait on. Well, this guy, you might have to wait a little bit too. I'm going with Chris Bell to the Dolphins, and he's coming off an ACL tear. We might not see him at the start of the season. I believe he had surgery in December, so it's going to put it very close. And I don't think the Dolphins have a reason to rush him back to try to get him out there week one. So I think we probably won't see him until a little way into the season. But man, what an opportunity. I like the player. I don't think he was anywhere near the top group of receivers in this class. But we were wondering who's going to end up going to the Dolphins, who's going to fill out that depth chart. Chris Bell, to me, is the best talent they have there. Now, he's got to get over this injury, and he's got to come back from the injury in the same form. We don't always know that that's going to be the case, right? Sometimes guys get hurt, and they're not the same player. They lose a step. They're not quite as efficient, all those sorts of things. So we need to monitor this one. We need to see if he's coming back at 100%. But once he does, who's he competing with for targets, man? Like Malik Washington? I know they drafted Caleb Douglas Greg ahead Dulcich. Of him.
I was going to say, right? The guy they drafted ahead of him?
but there's only a handful of guys. And I think Bell is a better player. I think he just got the injury discount. Yeah. I think the Dolphins got him a little bit cheaper because of that. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what comes out of this Dolphins receiving core. But there's targets to go around. And I think if he can get back to anywhere close to full health by midseason or in the back half of the season, he could be a player that we're hearing from this year, and then certainly a player that maybe we get more from as he enters next year, maybe getting a full offseason healthy and getting to be the player that we hope he can be.
Yeah, I compared him. I said this: he's what Treylon Burks was supposed to be. That's what Bell is. He actually has a better feel for the game than Burks, but he's a freak. Like, Bell is an absolute freak. Huge hands, long arms, can run, like accelerate, just raw and coming off the injury. And that's why he fell a little bit. If he was healthy, he would have gone a little bit earlier, even if with some of the rawness and everything. But this is an upside pick for them. If it hits, it hits. It's great. But it's got, I like this dart throw, but again, this is the range we're getting into it's ones that you can explain that possible upside role. And I think Bell's upside is a good one. Even if they add other guys. So it's just be patient with them. And
I think in some drafts, he's going to go end of the first round is Chris Bell. Cause people aren't going to worry about the Caleb Douglas thing. They did take Caleb Douglas ahead of him. Douglas is a guy that would have been to me, a totally fine day three pick after going back and charting him. He's not going to get drafted in this draft, by the way, spoiler alert. So again, people can have some feelings about that. But yeah, I think Douglas can be a useful player for them. But Chris Bell just has much higher ceiling. And I think he'll fit really well on some of those crossers and over routes. They're probably going to run in a very run heavy play action based attack here, at least what I'm picturing Miami to be. But I'm up here at 2.06 and I'm going to go back to the tight end. Well, I'm taking Patriots tight end Eli Raritan here. Nate Tice's guy right here, right in front of him. So that's what I'm doing here. Taking Eli Raritan. Love him landing in New England's offense. Josh McDaniels, right? Knows a little thing or two about tight ends, huh? We've seen that over the years. Not when he gets out on his own, then he doesn't know about tight ends. But Patriots little ecosystem and bosom here, he definitely knows what to be doing with these tight ends. But they do need an inline guy. He can be someone who can block in the run game, can contribute in the pass game. And yeah, long term, I think he's got a significant ceiling with Drake May tied to him here. So, Nate, yeah, I'm taking your guy, Eli Raritan.
Loved him. I think in a real draft, I'm going to take him much higher than people are expecting. Especially some teams that are Tucker Kraft based. So I do think that Raritan is just because he has true inline ability. Like, he really does. And again, it's not theory. He actually is blocking on tape. I love this pick so much. And I really like what the Patriots are doing overall. Hunter Henry, I believe, is a free agent after this year. They signed Julian Hill to be an inline guy anyways. Raritan could be the third guy to start, but do both. Be a route runner. Be a blocker. Really, like a comparison, and this is, it's like a Diet Coke Colson Loveland. Like, Raritan has a lot of that ability where he can be in line and also be a field stretcher and everything. But I just really like this. Probably not going to get a lot of benefit from it this year, but long term, yes. And especially with Drake May and McDaniels, like you mentioned, who pepper tight ends, willing to work over the middle, all that stuff. And he has enough athleticism to stretch the field as well. So super, super high on Raritan. Yeah, really targeting him and essentially every dynasty league possible.
All right, Nate, you're up here at 2.07. I just took your guy. So where are we going with the next pick here?
Dude, is this when I draft your guy, Elijah Surratt? No, I don't even know if that's your guy, but Elijah Surratt at 2.07 with the Ravens. This is more just like they finally got a ball winner. And like, you know, I feel like Lamar has needed that and a guy that's different from the guys they have right now. So I could see a role early on for him. I also think his game's kind of polished enough to be that. We talk about he could be a power slot conversion as well, Matt. And I think that fits in this offense as well with Declan Doyle. Like, I think he's going to love that inside-outside ability. Again, this is the kind of this offensive system has made a lot of that type of skill set. So Elijah Sherratt, again, we're getting to the weird range. And even if I'm drafting him over guys that maybe went ahead of him, I thought he was more of a third-round-ish talent. So I didn't think he went too far behind that, but I just think that this situation that he is going to complement what they have very well. And I think he is, his polish is going to let him play pretty early.
Yeah. You're taking him ahead of the guy that the Ravens took ahead. Another guy who's not going to get drafted here in Jacoby Lane. But I did see actually that Eric DaCosta said, we like Elijah Sherratt inside. He said that at one of the post-draft pressers here. So hopefully we're on to something with that. Yeah, I'm actually with you on this one that I would have Sherratt ranked with some of these guys that went on day two from a dynasty standpoint. So I totally don't mind going away from draft capital there. Boone, any thoughts on Raritan, Sherratt, or whoever you're going to take next at the eighth pick?
No, I think with some of these tight ends, I think Nate did a great job there of taking a guy who has some talent, who you're attaching to a young, talented quarterback, and who's going to get an opportunity either this year at the latest next year, it seems. So I think that's a great pick. And then, man, we wanted the Ravens to take a playmaker. They tried to double up at receiver. I also have Sherratt ranked ahead of Lane in my rankings, so I think that's the right call there. And then at 208... I'm happy that you guys are letting this dude fall to me. I don't think it's a slam dunk by any means, but I'm going with Nick Singleton, going to the Titans. We're going to see how this backfield plays out, right? Because Tony Pollard's still there, but he's 29. He's going into the last year of his deal. You have Tajay Spears, who, like, I don't think at this point we really look at him like he's going to be a lead back. I think he's much better in that complementary role. I think Singleton could be, and maybe I'm on an island there because I know some other people maybe don't feel as strongly about him. And again, I'm not saying that this is a for sure because he did go day three, but he's going to an opportunity in a backfield where he could get a chance this year. He really could. And, you know, it's not a direct comparison, but you think about what Brian Daboll did the last couple of years when he was with the Giants, right? 2 years ago. What happened? You thought going into the season it was going to be Devin Singletary? Nope, it was a day three guy in Tyron Tracy Jr. The next year, you thought it was going to be Tyron Tracy Jr.? Nope, day three guy in Cam Scataboo. Maybe we could see that happen again here, where a day three guy who I think is another player with a major injury discount because he broke his foot during the Senior Bowl week, didn't get to participate at all in the lead up to the draft. I think once he's healthy and they'll give him some time to do it, he doesn't have to rush back. He could be a guy that factors into this backfield this year and maybe gets an opportunity to start there next year. And again, it's a long shot, but that's where we're at in this draft. We're taking these running backs who could have an opportunity, who at the worst, I would say, ends up being a number two back and maybe has value for you fantasy-wise like that as a one injury away guy, but also has that, you know, pipe dream where maybe he could be a starter in the next year or two.
It's always not a bad thing to bet on the big back with a room full of small backs, you know, just like, cause he's the different flavor and just kind of just bet on him. Kind of like the Chris Rodriguez thinking maybe with the Jags this year, as much as I like Tootin. It's just one of those things. It's not bad to have some stock in those guys because just opportunity in theory, they should hold up as you just mentioned his broken foot, best of foot. Singleton was sometimes a frustrating player that never really got better, but he's so talented Yeah, I think the opportunity here. So I really like this pick. This is the range we're getting into, especially with the running backs. Just get one that this is an open opportunity in this backfield with new coaches. So it doesn't matter what those old roles are. This is the new guy that they're new toys. So I'm sure they're going to give him plenty of touches.
It's just insane that we're taking players that went 165 in the NFL draft in the round second two. Round of dynasty rookie drafts. Round but two. Like when we get to the receivers that are going to round out this round, it's just like these guys are total dart throws who could be, you know, even if they hit their ceilings in the NFL, they could just be contributing players on offenses that really aren't fantasy difference makers. And Boone's 100% right. Like there's a real chance Nick Singleton is a total zero. There's also a chance that he's a home run. So you might as well just take that upside swing, which I'm going to take the lesser version of that here at 2.09. I'm going to take the other Penn State running back in Catron Allen. I don't think that he necessarily has the theoretical ceiling of a Nick Singleton, but I think he could be like a good, rugged, like get what's there type of back, keep the offense on schedule. That's definitely not what they had in JCM last year, who's a little bit more of a high variance player. They kind of have Rashad White as well, but he's on a very cheap contract. It's very possible that, yeah, Catron Allen just emerges as the 187th overall pick in the NFL draft, as the lead back for a Washington offense that we think is going to be very good. So yeah, taking Catron Allen here, Boone, what's the general like kind of distinction between Singleton and Allen to you?
I liked Singleton better as a prospect. I felt like he was more explosive. I mean, Allen fits where he went with the Commanders. He actually fits quite well with those guys, right? He can be more of that power option with Rashad White, who we don't think is a true lead back, who's better in that pass catching role. He can give you some starts, but you don't want him starting over the whole year. He's also going to have to compete with our guy, JCM. Bill, what is Bill going to have to say about this, right? I think Bill's still in the mix. So I think this one, again, is a long shot. I don't know that I would favor Allen to be the guy that's going to come in and get a ton of volume, but there is the potential that that could happen there. So yes, this is certainly the range that he should be going in. And I think it's a smart pick over those receivers that we might not know about some of these receivers for a year or two. And we were talking before the show about how that happens. And sometimes those kind of depth receivers become roster cloggers on your bench, and you don't know if they're going to become something or not, and you hold on to them too long. And it's really just bad management in my mind for Dynasty. So I would rather go with some of these running backs where we might know by the end of the summer exactly whether Singleton's going to have a chance, whether Allen's going to have a chance, or whether these are just going to be guys that are filling out the depth chart in their backfields. And at that point, maybe you hold on to them if you're in a deep league, or maybe you just drop them for another piece.
Hammerhead. I again bet on the hammerhead kind of thing, and that's what he is. He's a singles doubles hitter, and that's kind of what their backfield needs, and actually kind of works with Jane Daniels' speed a little bit. So I actually love this landing spot for him. He's a not the sexiest player. He's kind of frustrating at times. He never makes a safety miss. I actually compared his running style a little bit to Rashad White, but with some beef, because Rashad White never makes a safety miss unless it's a screen. So that was kind of funny. They ended up on the same spot. They're not the same player, but the frustrating never make the safety miss, that's where they're very similar. But no, I actually liked Allen as a day three guy, and I thought this was a good landing spot for him. But he's a guy that in this range, that's one of the running backs I'm targeting in certain teams that I need that.
All right. Well, like I said, we're about to kick off a run here to end the second round of, you know, wide receivers. It will see what the ceiling ends up being. Nate, you get to kick us off here at 2.10.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, all right, some projecty guys and like secondary receivers, dirty work guys, and which ones I think have a shot. And so I went with Malachi Fields. Another guy that I've actually compared to Juwan Jennings before the draft, where I think he's an X that can be the dirty work guy on the inside. And also was a former quarterback, and not a, like, he didn't time very well, but he's got good hands to win that. And also, I think he runs routes a little bit better as far as more fluid in routes, more explosive out of routes than you expect, given his size and testing times. But with Neighbors there, you look at the rest of the receivers, you're like, okay, there's opportunity here. He's supposed to be a smart player, probably comes on board pretty early to play, I should say. And also just Neighbors injury history might get more usage than you expect. I don't think Dart's going to be a guy that's going to live with a high usage throwing. He's going to be a scrambler shot play kind of thrower. That's how I envision him. But I think Fields can kind of find a role on that and maybe be a sneaky number one this year if Neighbors keeps facing injuries, or, you know, can beat out Odell Beckham Jr., who apparently they're signing this week.
I mean, the Giants are telling
that's
us
real.
That Neighbors probably isn't going to be ready for the season, aren't they? Like, look what they did this offseason. They brought in Darnell Mooney. They brought in Calvin Austin. Now they drafted Fields. They're talking to OBJ. They are really adding a lot of pieces. Isaiah Likely at tight end, pass catching tight end, right? They are bringing in a lot of guys, and they needed help. But I also think that there's a strong chance that Malik Neighbors either isn't 100% at the start of the season, or in my mind, might not even be on the field in week one. He's even said it himself, right? That he won't go out there until he's ready. His body has to feel ready. That's what his recovery is in his mind. So, and I think we've seen him. He's a very strong-willed individual. He's not afraid to say what he thinks. I don't know that he's going to be pressured to get back on the field until he's ready. And I think all the moves that the Giants are doing are telling us that there's going to be opportunity for somebody else in this offense early in the season. And that means there's going to be opportunity for fantasy in that opening month, perhaps.
Yeah, I like this pick. I'm a big Malachi Fields fan. So this is what I would have done as well for all the reasons that you guys just said here. So Boone, 211, who are you taking off the board?
So, you know, I feel like I make the distinction of whether I really believe in a player or whether I'm just doing this move for dynasty. This one is more of the dynasty move. I am not a huge fan of Jerry Bernard. I don't love the player. I don't even really love the landing spot, right? He's going to an offense where we've talked about Michael Pittman and DK Metcalf sharing the field there and what that could mean for their fantasy outlook, because Metcalf didn't have huge numbers last year and he had almost no target competition. Now you bring in Michael Pittman. Now you also bring in Bernard. He fits well with those guys. He could be a playmaker. Those guys could be the big body dudes. You know, he can do a little more work underneath in the slot. That's exciting. And yet, how many targets is he really going to command? Like, unless we see Michael Pittman kind of move to the side, and it's definitely possible it could be one and done for Michael Pittman contract-wise. I'm pretty sure there's an out in his contract after this season. So maybe that's the case. Maybe that opens the door a little bit next year for Bernard. But overall, this is one where you're taking him, you're hoping that he can become this player and he has the talent to do it. I don't feel that confident, but there's really nobody else in this range that I felt like taking. So ADP wise, I know some people really believe in Bernard. I've seen him go off the board even early second round. So I took him, and you hope that maybe I'm wrong about my analysis on him and he turns out to be a better player than I expect.
I don't ever want to invest in dirty work glue guys in dynasty. It's like, he's a real football guy I like, but also just this team, I thought they needed a yak guy, especially working from the slot. So it's like, I like him in a real football sense, but fantasy wise, it's like, I really don't want to invest in him, no matter really where he ended up, because it's just what I picture what he's going to be. I just think he's always going to be an auxiliary guy. Not a guy he's going to get heated up. So I struggle with him because I appreciate his game. I like his game. So I agree with you, Booney, how you opened that up with, this is more just dynasty as opposed to maybe really what it is, because it just cause kind of thing. Like, he might get a usage of some things, but it's just, I appreciate his game and everything. But fantasy wise, I'm a little lower on him. And also just landing spot wise, I just think, Aaron Rodgers might hit him with a bunch of flat routes, but I don't think there'll be a lot of downfield stuff kind of going on, at least this year. If Aaron Rodgers is the starter, which he will be.
What a great pitch by you gentlemen here. I think he actually does fit as the third receiver along with DK Metcalf and Michael Pittman.
There's just a lot of Zacchaeus to his game. Has Zacchaeus been fantasy relevant? That's kind of how I envision him, whether that's fair or not.
Yeah, I think there's maybe a little bit more than that, just because I think he's bigger and, he could definitely work the middle of the field, like the intermediate middle of the field. Mm-hmm. But that's like not where Rodgers throws the ball anymore at this point. So
at all.
Not at all. So I do think Bernard's a fine pick here. I ultimately am going to round this out with a wide receiver as well. Chris Brazel with the Carolina Panthers, another very boom or bust player here. There's no doubt about that. But I liked the real life addition of Chris Brazel to the Carolina Panthers, but from a fantasy standpoint, he's probably their receiver three at best to start his career, and maybe stuck as the receiver three long term, because they have Tedrick McMillan. They're going to keep Jalen Coker there long term. And I just think from a skill set standpoint, he serves, he actually will help both of those guys as like the vertical stretch receiver and clear space out. I'm really fascinated to see what the Panthers offense looks like this year with all these tall, kind of like deep receiver room that they've got going on here. But Brazel at this point is just a bet on the upside and that he can click on and off the field. But again, it's Bryce Young's third receiver early on in his career and a team that's probably still going to be pretty run heavy. So I'm very fascinated by what the Panthers offense looks like from a dynasty standpoint. Boone, Brazel is, like I said, very, very, very boom or bust.
Yeah, I can't get on board with him from a fantasy perspective just because the love that I have for Jalen Coker. I feel like Coker would have to take a huge step back same. For him to get that opportunity fantasy wise, and I don't want to see it happen. So yeah, not overly excited about him. And I think that kind of leads us into the third round, right? Where do you go for some of these receivers that are talented but might not have an opportunity right away? And like I said, could turn into roster cloggers for a little while before maybe they do eventually emerge as something. Or maybe they never become anything. Or do you look at the other positions? Does tight end become more interesting because it's tight end premium? Do you go with some of these running backs that we mentioned a couple there, and Allen and Singleton, who could have opportunities to get the lead back job? Some of the guys that we have left, they probably are only going to be backups in their offense, barring an injury. And yet I think in the third round or even in the late second, that can be valuable, especially in this draft. So it makes the third round kind of interesting, even if maybe we don't love some of these prospects.
Yeah, this is a perfect player to encapsulate maybe how I feel about this range. It's like, and really just this class. I see the talent. I see everything. Just didn't, you know, there's so many red alerts, alarm bells going off. But I did like the landing spot, like what you even said, Matt. Like, this is actually, and it also fits the size profile that the Panthers seem to like with their receivers. And I also just think his skill set, even if it's raw, is, you know, more useful to an offense than maybe Legette, who is just like, okay, crossers. All right, that's all you got? Like, at least like with Brazil, it's like, okay, at least you can take the top off the defense. All right, there's a role, and that's going to open up Coker and Tet McMillan, who are so much better in the intermediate area. So even if he's just what you always call a sacrificial X, just a sacrificial deep ball guy, that actually fits this offense very well for what they need. So this was actually a good landing spot for him. I was a little worried somebody would overdraft him and just because of his talent and take him where he has to be a dude and do a bunch of stuff, but they can limit his focus early, and it fits their receiver room pretty well.
Yeah, again, boom or bust, and like even the boom is kind of, he's a very volatile, sacrificial X receiver type. And in fantasy, we know that's pretty hard to rely on, even if it's a great offense. And obviously, I don't know that this is a great offense just yet with what we've seen with Bryce Young. It's so funny the Panthers are building like the biggest wide receiver room in the league for the smallest quarterback in the league. There's not a take to that, like a big brain football take.
Funny.
It's funny. That's a pretty I mean, they take Monroe Freeling in the first round, this massive left tackle. So yeah, just an interesting football team right now. But we have more time over the course of the offseason to unpack things like that. So Brazel is like the perfect teardrop here, I think, to get us into the third round. I'm just going to list off our third round picks here. We'll show the whole board. And then I just want both of your thoughts so that we're not here for another hour. Both of your thoughts just on some of the guys that you picked, maybe your favorite pick, a different pick that you really like. So Nate at 3.01 went Adam Randall, Ravens running back. Boone at 3.02 goes Max Clair, Rams tight end. 3.03, I took Ted Hurst, wide receiver, Buccaneers. Great pick by me, I must say. Fourth pick, Nate Tice goes with Cardinals quarterback Carson Beck. I believe Nate picked him and then unpicked him a couple of times. So there you go. Boone at the fifth pick goes to Mon Claiborne, running back, Minnesota Vikings. These guys tried to bully me into taking Falcons wide receiver Zachariah Branch. But you know what? I was perfectly happy to take Branch at this range of the draft. No shade at all. Seventh pick, Nate takes Mike Washington, which Washington landing as a backup running back really just makes this screwed this class even more than it probably should have. Boone followed that up at eight with Emmett Johnson. I took at the ninth pick, Kalen Black, because whatever. I don't even know what to say.
Betting on Kyle Shanahan, baby.
Betting on Kyle Shanahan, maybe. Hey, Kalen, do you know all of these third round running backs, third and fourth round running backs that Kyle Shanahan has taken, all the way from Joe Williams to Jordan James last year? I saw Brett Coleman tweet this out. None of them even have 500 yards in their career. So maybe Kalen Black is the guy to finally break the trend, but probably not. Anyways, at the 10th pick, Nate went Marlon Klein, tight end of the Houston Texans. Boone at the 11th pick goes Justin Jolly, tight end-ish to the Denver Broncos. And another great pick by me at the 12th pick, I took the Chiefs' best man coverage beating wide receiver, and that is Cyrus Allen. That's right, boys. Best man coverage wide receiver on the Kansas City Chiefs. It's day three draft pick, Cyrus Allen. That's right. That's what this class is. Okay, Boone, you first. What was your favorite pick? Any other picks you really liked here from the third round?
Again, I don't necessarily love the player, but I think Carson Beck in the third round of a super flex draft is pretty incredible value, because I think there's probably a good chance that he could get some starts late this season at the worst. And man, they got a ton of talent around him there. They got a lot of skill position players where if he could just give them average play, he could potentially return some value for fantasy. And all of a sudden, maybe he's a piece that you could trade, get some value from that way. You get a little more than a third round value from him. So I think he probably belongs in the late second in terms of his dynasty outlook. And then, like I mentioned earlier, the running backs. In this range, I would take shots on some of these guys in part because of the landing spots. And yes, probably unlikely that Mike Washington or Emmett Johnson are going to start, but they're just one injury away. And Emmett Johnson, I was really excited about that pick because Kenneth Walker has a pretty extensive injury history. Yep. And now he's going to be expected to be the guy. If he misses time, now Emmett Johnson is the next man up. It's not going to be Amari DiMercato. Breshard Smith is more of a pass-catching option. So I really like those picks. And often I will say in dynasty leagues, I'm willing to take my third rounder and go trade it to someone else for a one injury away backup running back who I think could be good if they get that opportunity. And normally people are like, really? You're going to give me a third round pick for this guy? This guy isn't even starting. Why do you even want him? Well, that's why I want him, because halfway through the season when that injury happens, I get a ton of value from it and I can either use that player. Now I can trade him for more. So those are more process things. But yeah, Damon Claiborne is the one here too for me who might have a chance to start if Aaron Jones gets hurt, but I do think it'll require an Aaron Jones injury there. But he is kind of interesting to me in that Vikings offense with Jordan Mason probably not being the guy and Aaron Jones being on the back nine of his career.
Nate, yeah, same me, question to you. Favorite pick of yours that you liked?
Yeah, no. What Booney ended at there with the Claiborne pick, I actually really like that one as a as just an opportunity standpoint. He's different than what they have. You know, he's somewhat stylistically similar to Aaron Jones, but not really. He's even smaller and faster. You know, Claiborne is in the perfect world. He's a Diet Coke, you know, Devon Achane, but he's you know, as far as he's smaller, he's got a lot of juice. He actually runs between the tackles. He's just is small and he has some fumble issues. He's always gonna have a split backfield. But Aaron Jones has not finished the season healthy. Jordan Mason is a, you know, a dune buggy at running back where he's reliable. He'll get you some easy yards. They've really invested in their run game. And last year was the best the Vikings run game has been under Kevin O'Connell. So I just like that pick because I do think he has more real running back and not just totally gadgety, even if he is smaller. So it could be a fun opportunity. You also see the Vikings are in on Juwan Jennings, which I would love that signing. How about that run game even more with his blocking? That's perfect, isn't it?
They need a third receiver so bad. And Daniel Jeremiah, I want to say that he said this on air, maybe not, I don't know. But this was like 2 years ago, so who cares? But he came on Mock Draft Monday and said like, oh yeah, the Vikings are just like, I've heard they're obsessed with getting like their version of Juwan Jennings, which at the time was funny because that was when Jennings was just like the dirty work, big slot block. He didn't even have that like big receiving season that he did in 24. This was after the 23 season. And I was like, oh yeah, I mean, it seems kind of funny, but yeah, they've really needed like a dirty work third receiver. So why not just go get the actual version of Juwan Jennings? I think that would make a lot of sense.
The dirty work.
And yeah, you're right. It would help out the run game because like, Jordan Addison ain't a good blocker. Like Ty Felton's not going to be that guy, you know? Nope. So like they definitely kind of need that body in the receiver room.
Yeah. So I just like that. Once I saw that he was visiting, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. That's perfect. Power slot. Boom. You compliment all the other guys. That's exactly what I would want. Like who I'd want him to go with. And you know, now that I look back, I probably would have gone with Johnson over Washington as far as the backup running back thing, because just what Boone said, I also just like, you know, the Chiefs infrastructure a little bit better for the run game this year. I will say too, the Marlon Klein pick, I'll explain. He has some, again, this is why tight ends inline ability. I really, at 310, this is great. Like I'm very excited about that because the opportunity that could present itself in that Texans offense. Dalton Schultz is a free agent after this year. Klein, he signed a mini extension. That's a lie. But Klein actually has a different ability than Schultz. He can play in line full time. Schultz does it, but he's a zone blocker. He kind of a shield blocker. He scraps. Klein actually can pop some guys and move some guys. Also has some vertical ability. So just like most tight ends, it's going to take some time. But I think there's some nice opportunity there in a Texans offense that isn't idealistic. And I'm also one of the higher guys on CJ Stroud, but just betting on a long-term kind of investment here. I think I have some draft or some teams where I have a bunch of third round picks. I feel like I'm going to be throwing a whole bunch of darts at tight ends. Just trying to one of these guys, one or two of these guys hits. I think that's what this draft class is.
it's tight end premium. Like,
you do not have to explain taking a tight end.
No, no.
There should probably even be more tight ends going off the board here. That's definitely a solid pick here at the end of the third.
If this wasn't a tight end premium draft, you know, I gave Colin some crap for making it a tight end premium draft. If this wasn't tight end premium, I don't know who would be taken in the third round, boys. Like, I mean, I just looked at, I don't think, who's the next running back up? Like Eli Heidenreich, hopefully doing like the scammy, you know, Aaron Rodgers reception. I know Boone's got a top 90 dynasty ranking, which is unbelievable. Like 90 players in this class. That's insane.
Yeah, tight end.
But yeah, I mean, it's Eli Heidenreich, who was drafted in the seventh round. I mean, like, that's what we'd be talking about in the third round if we took another running back here. It's just, it's so bleak. But yeah, just real quick on my picks before we get out of here. Like, again, I do think Ted Hurst is a good upside dart throw at this point in the third round. And yeah, I took Cyrus Allen just to do the signaling about the Chiefs thing. That's the only thing. But I do actually really like Cyrus Allen, and I think he's a good sleeper. So just wanted to get him in on the end of this one because I think his skill set, he's another smaller guy, but his skill set stands out in the Chiefs receiver room because he's not another like Mickey Mouse route runner. He's actually like a real, real deal route runner. So wanted to get him in here, even though, yeah, technically like Jacoby Lane or Brennan Thompson is worth considering. Bryce Lance, if you're Skylar Bell, if you're looking at receivers. But yeah, there's bazillion receivers you could take in that third, fourth round range of your dynasty rookie drafts. It gets late super early at running back. So, Boone, you're right. It's a good thing we had these tight ends to fall back on, because otherwise I'm not sure who we'd be taking in this exercise. But that is going to do it for today's show. Appreciate you guys for doing the Dynasty Rookie Mock Draft. Nate, Boone, we did it. We took a bunch of players who, you know, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes for some of them.
There's always next year.
How about this? We kind of like were texting about this. After we did the exercise, I looked at, you know, I always get my hands on a lot of third round picks. It's just how I do trades. And I always just somehow get my hands on them. I'm looking to trade those bad boys as quick as I can. After I did this exercise, I'm like packaging it with guys. I'm like, I'll throw all three of these third rounders in there. You want them? I'm trying to move up. I'm trying to move up as possible. But yeah, I'm glad we did this exercise before I jump into some of these dynasty drafts, because it was a great exercise to do. So a lot of fun doing with you two buds.
Yeah, I have two third round picks in the rookie draft that I'm in right now, and I regret that. I regret having the two third round picks. Not a tight end premium league, so we'll see what happens there. But Boone, you are going to be back with me on Thursday, so look forward to that show as we fire up the People's Panic Meter. Yes, that's right. What are the situations that you are most panic about after coming out of the NFL draft here? We're also going to talk through any of your biggest dynasty debates. So any and all of that. Come one, come all, send in your panic questions, send in your dynasty debates, send them to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. We are going to answer them on the show live Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern right here on this YouTube channel. Until then, we are out.